rules are. It's been too long. Then I know.
All right, we're on. I'm here with Mr. Bobby Harding. First time actually hanging out, I think.
Thank you, dude.
Besides the jiu-jitsu gym.
Yeah, man.
So you said this is not your first podcast. What other podcasts have you done?
Nothing crazy. Just some friends who had a podcast out in Seattle.
Is that where you're from?
No. Lived in Seattle for 10 years. I'm originally from the West Coast.
What part?
I grew up in Bakersfield.
Ooh,
you know where that is? San Joaquin Valley?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's not much to do there, I think.
You know, Bakersfield gets a bad rap. There's, I mean, it's not a small town.
Yeah, there's I've never actually been there, yeah.
It's not pretty.
It's like the desert kind of thing?
It is not like kind of, it is the desert.
It is the desert?
Yeah, it is just dirt. And if they wouldn't have figured out how to get water down from the north, nothing would grow there. But if you get water there, it's incredible.
You got a bunch of farms there?
No. But I did work on farms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that how you grew up? Like, kind of like, is that where you grew up in Bakersfield?
Grew up in Bakersfield, yep.
How long did you live there?
When I was 18, I left, went to college in Seattle, and I've gone back to Bakersfield to visit. I have family there, but have not lived there since.
Do you not like Bakersfield that much, or do you miss it?
You know, no, I don't miss Bakersfield. I miss family.
Yeah.
I do think California is the most beautiful state.
Oh, yeah. It's really nice.
Objectively, it's just the winter. So I miss California, geography, the beaches and the mountains.
I lived in California, too, a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, where?
Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
Right off Hollywood Boulevard. I lived right next to the Chinese theater.
Okay.
Literally, Chinese theater, my apartment.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was.
Yeah.
I went there to music school.
Hollywood's different.
Yeah. I can't imagine how it is now because that was 2011.
Okay.
So it wasn't bad. There was homeless people everywhere, but.
How long were you there? You moved there in 2011?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how long were you there?
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Just for school.
Okay.
I moved there from Guatemala. So.
Ah, Guatemala.
Yep. You ever been there?
No. Nicaragua. I go to Nicaragua every year.
Oh, you go for like...
That's charity? a whole nother story.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, but before that, though, I lived in Pasadena from 2006 to 2010. I was hoping we overlapped a little bit, but we didn't.
2001?
2006 to 2010.
Oh, okay. You like that better a little bit?
Pasadena?
Yeah.
Pasadena's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we loved it.
I didn't travel much. I didn't have a car. There's public transportation, though, which is cool. I went to Whittier for a show and stuff. It's kind of close to that area, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, I miss the beach, man. I miss going to Santa Monica Boulevard, just taking a bus. I don't have to worry about parking or anything and just hang out. It was fun.
Yeah, we went to the beach all the time.
That's like, what I miss the most.
Yeah. I think when we lived in Seattle, we had moved from Seattle to Pasadena. Mm-hmm. We felt like we could have done Seattle better, even though we were there for 10 years. There was a lot we did, but there's a lot we didn't do. Like, we could have taken advantage more. So when we were living in Pasadena, we were like, let's really take advantage of this place. So we had a child. When we moved to Pasadena, our oldest was 2 months old. We went to the beach at least once a week.
Yeah. Did you get in the cold water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad. I mean, you know, but we did have, I had a wetsuit, tried to learn to surf.
It's fine. No sharks? You didn't see any sharks?
Never saw a shark.
Yeah, me neither. I think I saw a dolphin, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was a shark. Who knows?
Could have been.
Yeah, maybe we just got out. Why did you move to Seattle?
That's where I went to college. So when I graduated from high school, I moved up to Seattle, went to Seattle Pacific University, right there in the city.
Well, what were you majoring on?
I majored in communication.
Yeah.
I tell everybody it was interpersonal communication, but I don't. Technically, it was just a communication major.
Yeah.
But I loved the interpersonal stuff, and so I took a bunch of classes in interpersonal communication. Maybe like, not a bunch, but like maybe two or three.
That seems like a common degree. Like, what's
very common?
What's really a communications degree?
It's nothing. It's like, I'm pretty sure, and this is, and I can say it because I graduated with it. It's a great general degree for anything, and it's not too difficult from what I mean. It wasn't. I didn't think it was too difficult. Yeah. So if you're not sure what you want to do, it's not a bad route.
Just learn how to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, but it can be good. I mean, like,
is that how it is about yeah, what was
speaking?
Yeah, it's just about like public speaking kind
of
thing.
There can be some of that. Like I mentioned that I did some interpersonal communication stuff. There's organizational communication kind of routes that you can go. I don't remember all the classes I took, but it was just kind of a broad coverage of all of that. And then I minored in visual arts.
Okay.
But
like,
yeah,
video stuff and
no, like, know, painting and painting. Stuff like that.
Oh, okay. You paint a lot still?
No.
No, you ever paint? You have any paintings?
I do. I mean, I'm a pretty creative person. I'm more of a doodler than a painter or like a drawer. I doodle a lot.
That seems like more organic. Like, you can just do that anywhere and just really get it going. You use like a pencil and stuff like that.
Yeah, anything. Pencil, anything. Pen, doesn't matter. Like, I've been a doodler my whole life. It helps. I have ADHD. helps me listen and focus if I can just be doodling or something, you know. Yeah, big doodler.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a man of many. You're a communicator. You beat up people at the gym.
That's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You're a brown belt, first of all. So
yeah,
how long have you been doing jiu-jitsu?
9 years. I started in January of 2016, so it's been about 9.
Here in Murfreesboro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all at Guardian.
All at Guardian?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Why did you want to move to Seattle from Bakersfield?
When I was in high school, my church youth group took a trip up to Seattle for some reason, and we saw this college that was there. We drove by it. I thought it was beautiful. I mean, from an 18-year-old me, thought it was really cool. And so I just got
completely
it in my,
different, huh?
Yeah, got it in my brain that's where I want to do this. I want to go up here.
So what? It was the city more than the college?
I didn't know anything about the college.
Yeah.
The college looked cool. Kind of looked like Hogwarts. I mean, it was beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, just
was
really
it in
old.
The forest?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of trees if you've never been there. But just big brick buildings and very neat, you know, very collegiate looking. Not a big school. And Seattle was, I mean, it was the late, I graduated from high school in 96. And so Seattle was on the map. Like, you know, it was a cool town.
Did you see like Nirvana and all that stuff?
I never saw them live.
No. You were much.
That kind of, I was a little late for that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like 92, right?
Yeah.
Nevermind was 92. Yeah. Yeah, when did he die? Did he die in? Around that. Didn't he around that? Like, 94, right?
Yeah, 94. It was before before I got there.
Yeah. You're a musical person, obviously.
I mean, I love music.
Yeah. Do you have like a main instrument?
I've played guitar since junior high. I can play guitar, ukulele. I've tried playing mandolin. I can strum a few chords on that. I'd say, and then I mentioned drums. I've always loved drums. I had drum lessons during COVID. I started taking drum lessons from this awesome guy here in Murfreesboro.
Also, it's just recent, like the drum thing is recent.
Well, I played drums in junior high, like in the marching band and in orchestra.
Oh, did you play the snare?
I played the toms, tri-toms 1 year, the quads
year. Those are cool. I like
those. Yeah, I did the snare and marching band. I have always loved drums. I had my first drum set I got in high school, but I never really dove into drumming. So I never got really good. And I never played in a band. I'd love to play in a band as a drummer just for fun, because I've heard that's amazing. You should tell us about it.
Yeah.
But guitar is probably the one I'm most proficient at.
Did your parents go crazy with the drums?
I don't remember. They may have. I didn't. Yeah. If they did, I forgot.
I remember. Yeah, one of my neighbors got a little pissed one time. So
here?
No. Back home when I first started. I don't know what's worse to learn. Like if you have a kid that wants to learn an instrument, I don't know if what's worse, if it's drums or violin.
I was just gonna say violin.
Yeah.
We had a good friend whose kid was learning violin, and I have vivid memories. I mean, he's 15 or 16 now. But it was not pleasant.
No, it's one of the worst sounds you can ever encounter.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard it. Not even like kids screaming, because that's pretty bad for me. I don't like kids just like going crazy. I don't know what's worse.
Turns out it's hard to make that thing sound good.
Yeah. Violin. Yeah. You just think it's like, I don't know.
No.
It's like guitar. Like I can't play guitar. I can't, like, my hands are really small. Uh-huh. And it's hard for me to make the chords, so it just sounds horrible.
Yeah. I don't have big hands either, but somehow I've managed to figure it out.
So what was it like growing in Bakersfield?
Oh, man.
Did you live like in a neighborhood or an apartment?
Lived in a neighborhood. Had a pool in our backyard.
Oh, nice.
So as a kid, it was a lot of time swimming, a lot of sunburns. Even when I was growing up, there's a heavy, heavy population of Mexican Americans there. So a lot of my friends growing up were Mexican kids. And I always wished I kind of was a Mexican kid. our babysitter, not our babysitter, she's sort of like a nanny, but she was this Mexican woman named Mona. She was an angel. And anytime my parents like went on a little trip or overnight or something, we'd stay with Mona. And
how many siblings do you have?
I have three sisters.
Are you the youngest one? The
no, oldest? I'm second born.
Second born.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so we got spoiled.
Three sisters?
Three sisters. Wow. Yeah. And I have three girls. I have four kids.
Oh.
Three girls and a boy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. When that happens, like it's like kind of like the same. You just repeating it.
I know.
That actually, I've never met anybody that literally repeated their family.
Not in order, though. It's not the same order for me.
Yeah.
But it's still three girls and a boy.
Do you see like some similarities like of how you grew up with her?
No, I mean, not really, because I had one older sister, two younger sisters. In some ways, I kind of felt like the oldest.
Yeah, you were like the man.
Even though my older sister was there and she could probably kick my ass for the most of our lives until high school, you know. I still felt like the boy, the old, because I had two younger sisters. Yeah, that's right. But my son, who's the youngest,
he has
a whole different existence with these three older sisters.
Wow.
And not a bad one. It's just different.
Are y'all like in age? Are y'all like pretty far apart or are you?
No, it's like a storybook, you know, 2.5 years apart, almost each one.
Each one?
Yeah.
Oh, so me and my family, we're like 9 years apart.
Oh.
All of us.
Yeah, that's different.
Oh, yeah.
How many siblings do you have?
Well, I have two sisters from my dad before he met my mom. And one of them's got to be 50. One of them's got to be 45 or something like that.
Okay.
And I'm 33. But I never really met them until I was probably 9 or something like that, 8.
Okay.
And then I have an older sister. She's 9 years older than me from my mom before she met my dad.
Okay.
And then it's me. And then it's my little brother. And I'm like almost 10 years older than him.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big spread.
From my parents, yeah. But I grew up with only my sister from my mom's side.
Okay.
And then my brother came in. Yeah, like it's, yeah.
You're almost like an only child. Like with that kind of spread, I'm not sure that any of the dynamics that they talk about apply.
Nothing. Because when she was 15, I was 6. At 15, you're going out, you're doing whatever teenagers do, and I'm just hanging out, watching TV, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit like I was an only child. It's a lot better once everybody grows up, and then you have more in common, and at least something that I... Because when you're, like, little, you don't want to listen to them. Right. You don't want to learn or stuff like that. That's how I felt, at least. Now, because that's why I do this, too. Like, I like doing the podcast just to know more about people.
Mm-hmm.
Just for being in, a relationship with people. I would never, like, before I would be like, I don't know you, I don't care. You know, stuff like that.
Hmm.
So now, once you get older, like, I feel... It matters more, like having good people around you.
Yeah,
and because it makes the everything better. Like,
yeah,
it's a whole difference of how you can go this way or this way, and there's obviously a better way. So I'm more interested now. Like, I think it's with age for sure. Did you always like people like that, or
I've always loved people.
You always were a people person.
I think so. Like, yeah, I mean, I love people. Yeah. All kinds of people, you know.
Did you go to a big high school?
No, I went to a Catholic high school, not big.
Was that like a private school?
Yep.
All your siblings went to Catholic school?
My older sister did not, and then me and my two younger sisters did. We all went to the Catholic school. We're not Catholic, though. We just, I can't remember why we landed on that one. I started my freshman year at a public high school, But I think my parents were worried that I might get into trouble.
Were you a troublemaker?
Kind of. I mean,
or was it like the town?
Not,
or stuff?
You know, maybe both. You know, I wouldn't say I was a troublemaker, but I was. I'm a curious person.
Yeah.
I'm not a fighter, but I don't mind a little conflict.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
you like some chaos
to try new things. You know, so like they're trying to protect me, and
I'm the same way too. Like I get into anything, like any kind of hobby, any kind of bad things. Sometimes not by choice, but I'm just there, and you know, yeah. And it happens.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, why not? Right.
Yeah. So yeah. I think they probably saw the. They're probably That's looking right. ahead a little bit and think, let's get him into a. Something a little different.
Let's get him straight. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's crazy. So, what did you want to do when you graduated? Like, did you just choose communications because it was like a broad degree to do anything?
No, honestly. So I when I graduated, by the time I graduated from high school, because I had grown up going to church, I felt like that. Maybe working in the church was something that I wanted to do or that God wanted me to do. And this is a long, complicated story that's really evolved even in the way I think about it. But at that time, anyway.
When you were 18?
Yeah. I thought if I am going to go to graduate school for something to work in the church, communication seems like a good kind of base degree to have.
Yeah.
You know, for something like that. So that's why I did it.
You always been a church person?
Yeah.
You grew up always going to church?
Yes.
What kind of church did you go to?
I grew up going to like a non-denominational. Are you a church person?
No.
At all? Did you ever?
I grew up Catholic. Yeah, everybody's Catholic down there.
Okay. So. I just wanted to check before I started using it. It's all about the language.
Yeah.
So I grew up going to a church that was just solo. Like, it wasn't connected to any other churches. It wasn't Catholic. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Presbyterian. It wasn't nothing. It was just its own church.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, its theology or the way that it thought about God and the way that it talked about God, it was, it probably would be similar to, like, a Baptist church. Okay. You know? Lots of talk about heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like, I don't know if... Perspective is interesting. You know, like, is this stuff that I heard, or is this just my memory, or did I build, like, I don't yeah. know. But all I know is the feeling I had in the church I grew up in was that I'm not really good enough, you know, for anything. And it's a miracle that God even loves me because I'm such a monster, you know, like.
In what way, like, you think you. It's just like human nature are just not good enough. Is that how it was perceived?
That was kind of the message that was delivered. You're never.
You're a constant work.
Yeah, you're a sinner, man.
Yes.
And you're going to burn in hell if you don't blah, blah, blah.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Very condemning.
Maybe
condemning.
Not that explicitly, but yeah. close.
Yeah.
And it's important to, you know, be a good Christian. Invite Jesus into your heart and be good and follow the rules and all this. Well, I was terrible at following the rules. And so for someone who grew up in a church like that, I started to believe that, like, maybe I'm not a good Christian then, you know, and maybe God doesn't love me that much because if following the rules is what it takes to be a good Christian, then I'm a real shitty Christian, you know?
following the rules in general?
Yeah, just yeah. whatever, you know, like Christians don't drink and they don't fool around and they don't go to parties and they don't smoke and they don't, like, all this stuff. So if you ever do any of that, you're like, something's wrong with me. There must be something wrong with me because I did that, you know. So I felt worse. I just didn't feel good about myself, really, spiritually speaking there.
That's interesting to have that perspective.
Yeah.
That young.
Yeah.
Because I
did I have that perspective at that time? Or is that adult me kind of reflecting? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All I know is that when I graduated high school, I was ready to not, I didn't really care about church that much. I was ready just to have fun and.
Yeah, go out there.
Worry about that later.
Yeah.
This is a long answer. I'm sorry. This is
no,
so
no, it's great. I love it.
So I met who is now my wife, Lexi, in college, and we're kind of going through college together. Sometime during my last year of college, maybe or so, we started going to this Presbyterian church in Seattle. It was so different than anything I'd ever experienced in a church. I had never experienced anything like it. Like, it was, you talk about the church I grew up in feeling kind of worse about myself after I went to church. I was leaving this Presbyterian church feeling better about myself. Like, oh, you know.
What was, like, the difference, like a different perspective or different, like, interpretation of, like...
Yeah, it's a whole different theology, which I've come to learn that now. Like, I probably wouldn't have said that when I first started going. All I knew is it felt better.
Yeah.
And what I was hearing was more positive. Like, yes, we're all broken. We all screw up. But that's okay.
That's part of life.
Yeah. Right? God's love doesn't change because of those things. And it's all good.
Are you using, like, the same Bible?
Same Bible?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just a different message?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know, like, if people from the church I grew up in heard me saying this, they would, and if I were to tell you, like, well, the Presbyterians really emphasized God's grace over judgment and stuff like that.
Oh,
they, man. The church I grew up in would say, no, we emphasize grace too. What are you talking about? Are you crazy? And that's true. All I know is how it felt to me. Like, the church in Seattle, there was such an emphasis on grace and forgiveness and welcome and freedom because of all that. I just felt like.
You don't think it was like a communication mishap, like of the way certain preacher kind of like.
Yeah, I don't
know. Because everybody should know that you're a preacher, right?
Yeah.
Is that your full-time?
Full-time.
Job? Full-time, okay. Mm-hmm. And what church was?
I'm the associate pastor for family ministries at First Presbyterian Church here in Murfreesboro.
Okay. Because whenever you preach, you're interpreting your own way, right? It's all in your...
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you feel he's trying to tell you.
Sure.
You think, like, if it was a different... Maybe pastor or at your first church, you think it would be different?
Why not? You know,
especially because it's a non-denominational, right?
Yeah.
So it's more like this is what I believe God is trying to tell everybody, right?
Yeah. And to be fair, the church I grew up in, I didn't go to the big worship service very often at all.
You went to Sunday school,
yeah, kind of thing? Yeah, during the worship where all the adults are in the church, like, worshiping, and the pastor's preaching and all that, the kids and the youth are in their own area doing their thing. So
youth mean until, like, what kind of age?
Through high school.
Oh, you don't go with the adults at all?
Until after high school. That's how it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, I mean, I only have a few memories of sitting with my parents in worship on a Sunday.
Okay.
I was always with my age group.
I've only been to one church like that. There was a Lutheran church in Guatemala.
Uh-huh.
And my friend, his dad was actually from the States. And he lives in Guatemala and everything. Mm. So it was all in English and stuff like that. And that's the only time where I went to a church where it was like a Sunday school.
Mm.
Because when you're Catholic, you just go to regular mass.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, like, when you're like six and they're talking to you about all this kind of like really adult perspective of life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what kind of, I was like, okay, it's kind of different message for like, not directly for a 6-year-old kid or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had my first communion, I had my confirmation and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody does that, right?
Yeah, it still happens.
Yeah.
You mean outside of the Catholic Church?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you do have all that?
Yeah. We still do confirmation. We don't make as much of a fuss about First Communion.
Okay.
As much as Catholics or maybe some of the Lutheran churches still do.
Yeah, I'm always interested because I don't understand what's the difference between all the different Christian churches and stuff. Because my family's Baptist.
Uh-huh.
I grew up Catholic. You're Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Lutheran that I went that one time. So I don't really understand what's like... the different, you know, like, content or
Yeah. Do you really want to talk about this? Everyone's going to turn the podcast off if we start talking.
I'm curious. Because,
well, I don't know that I can answer it, like, perfectly.
No, yeah. What's your perspective of, like, because have you been to other, not religions, I guess, because they're all technically Christian, right?
Yeah.
Have you been to different churches like that?
Different Protestant churches,
okay,
right?
That's what it is, yes.
So after the Reformation happened and this church split away from the Catholic Church, Protestant Reformation happened, then all these different kind of Protestant denominations, so to speak, mm-hmm. started to form, like the Presbyterians and the Anabaptists and all this stuff. Nowadays, like there are clear-cut denominations that have differences, but they're all theological differences, like where they emphasize different things, but they might interpret things a little bit differently, prioritize things a little bit differently. Maybe they feel like the church itself should be structured differently, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're right. At the end of the day, there's really not that much difference. You know, like we have lots of people at our church who grew up Methodist, who if you were to quiz them, like, what are the differences between the church you grew up in, the Methodist church, and this one here? They'd be like, nothing. There is no difference, you know?
Yeah. So why is it? I haven't delved that much into all that kind of stuff in religion. But yeah, like, what do you think? Have you been to other churches and try to understand, like, what is, like, their goal kind of thing? Do you go to other churches sometimes? Or I don't know.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could say, like, what I feel like their goal is. It feels very similar to me. Like, not too long ago, I was at New Vision Baptist Church across town. Big Baptist church. Very different than the church that I'm at.
Like, in what way?
It's just a giant. There's thousands of people that go there.
It's just like a more like scaled down.
Yeah, the scale's bigger, but theologically different. I mean, it's a Baptist church, so.
Yeah, when you mean theological different, like what?
This is a tough quiz, pop quiz. For example, like Presbyterians with baptism, for example, we believe that. We can baptize babies or adults. Doesn't matter, either one. Mm-hmm. And really, there's nothing about baptism that we say saves anybody. You don't have to be baptized to go to heaven. Like,
because that's a big thing for Catholics.
It's an important sacrament. I know.
Yeah.
But it's an important sacrament. It's an important thing to do. But whether you're a 2-month-old or a 100-year-old person, for a Presbyterian, the real activity of the baptism is
accepting.
God.
Yeah.
It's like this acceptance, this movement of grace that happens in baptism that's mysterious and beautiful. And so whether you're a kid or an adult, like God's grace comes near in baptism, and it's a really meaningful sacrament, you know. A Baptist doesn't really view baptism the same way, where they don't want to baptizing in the Baptist church, and they're probably Baptists that might hear this and tell me I'm wrong, but it's a choice that someone has to make. So you're not going to baptize a baby, you know, like baptism is something that you decide to do, and you profess your faith about Jesus, and then you get dunked, where we'll, like Catholics, Presbyterians will sprinkle with water, you know, you don't have to get dunked in water.
Yeah.
But Baptists might, Baptists, not all, would say you have to be dunked. You have to be old enough to make a decision to be baptized. And theologically, I'm not exactly sure the differences.
Yeah. It seems to be like the same message, right? Kind of thing, just different ways to deliver.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, is baptism important at New Vision or at any Baptist church? You bet. Is it important at our church? Yes. You know, I don't think it's important to, or,
to everybody.
To nitpick about which is better or whatever. But you were asking about, I visited the New Vision not too long ago. It was for a funeral, but it was very well attended. And the senior pastor was there, and it all felt good. Like, I didn't think, like, man, this place is nuts.
This is so different.
This is just so weird, you know?
Yeah.
It seemed great. You know, they're good people over there. It was a good community.
Which is the point, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what denomination you associate with. Do you feel like that too?
Or? Yes.
Yeah.
Not every denomination feels like that, but yes, I feel like that.
Some of them don't feel like that, you said?
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, there's...
Yeah, without saying.
There are some that feel like it's their way or the highway.
Okay.
There's, you know...
Yeah, like, it's like strict kind of regime kind of thing.
Yes.
Kind of like a cult, really bad cult.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once it's not about the community, it kind of seems like a cult leader just telling you what to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I think there really needs to be an emphasis in outward in how we live outside the
church, you know, kind of thing.
The getting together and worshiping is important, but what's more important is how we live out there.
Yeah. And how or the impact you put in other people.
Kindness, right? And love, yes. Out there. Like, that's what it's about. I think that's what we're...
I think that's what a lot of people miss about religion, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Like they just think they just get together and just think they're holier than thou kind of thing.
Yep.
Instead of having just the resources to just live a little better life, right?
Yeah.
Because I and even like when we're talking about like, and for Catholics, there's a lot of like imagery kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only religion that does that, right?
As far as I know, maybe there may be some like Coptic religions or Orthodox religions that use like iconography and other images and
like
things.
I think like what most people think is kind of wrong, right, is they're worshiping of like an actual image.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because look, I don't know if you've ever seen like processions, you know, what those are.
Yeah.
Like the ones in Guatemala are like huge. It's like, it's a whole thing. For a lot of people, it might be weird, but just the act of it, I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Just to experience something like that. Because literally, like, it's like the whole town is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody wants to be involved, but it's coming through your house, in front of your house.
But are they really worshiping the images, you know? No.
I don't
think so. At least not. I would. My best friend growing up was Catholic. I've been to Mass tons of times. Went to Catholic high school. I know that reaction. Like, oh, God, they're worshiping Mary. Or they're worshiping this icon or this picture. But I feel like that is reactionary from the other side, you know? I don't think that they're worshiping the image. I think...
The idea of it.
Yeah, I think Catholics know the difference between Jesus and a picture of Jesus. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like a sculpture.
Yeah.
Because that's what they put. They put a wooden sculpture that have literally been... They've been at the church for 500 years.
Yeah.
So I think that also has, like... Maybe it survived, and it seems like when because they ask for something, like, you know, like prayer, and it's like they have like a connection to it, right?
Yeah,
but yeah, maybe it's not exactly like their work. I don't think they're really worshiping that. It's just like the image of what it represents,
and it's And I think even in my context here, you could point to things and be like, "Are you doing the same thing with that?" You know, I mean. Even at any church, I think we could probably point to something and say, okay, it's easy to point to the 600-year-old statue that's been in this church that is surrounded by candles and people kneel in front of it and they pray. Are you worshiping that wooden thing? You know, like, get rid of it. If it's not important, get rid of it. Well, we're not going to get rid of it. It's precious. You know, it's ancient. It's important. Well, you're worshiping it. Well, I think even in a church that was built in the last 20 years, there's things that we could point to that resemble the same type of thing or like garner the same type of response from people. And if you were to say, we're going to get rid of that thing, people would flip.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like killing a family member or something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of not in that same way, but kind of like an important part of your life.
And I don't mean to be too controversial, but the first example that comes to mind is the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
You put the American flag in a sanctuary in a place where people worship God. That's fine. Most people probably don't think about it. But what happens if you try to take you say, we're going to take the flag out of here because this is about worshiping God and not about the United States. People aren't, I mean, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
People aren't going to be happy. Well, do you worship the flag? Why do you want it in here? Well, no, we don't worship the flag, you know, but so there's things that, I think a lot of churches have that are like that.
Yeah. That's interesting. So so you say you always wanted to be part of the church and stuff?
Well, I didn't always want to, but I did start to feel like that was kind of the trajectory that the universe had me on.
Did that come back in college when you went to college?
Well, yeah, we started going to that Presbyterian church toward the end of my college career. Mm-hmm. Really loved it. I started volunteering there in the high school youth group.
Did you attend church before that, like before you started going to that? You didn't go at all?
Not really.
Mm-mm. Was it just like not interested or?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I don't even remember. I probably thought that I should be going and felt guilty about not going for a few years, you know, during college. But I may have visited a few.
Yeah.
Over those few years. I mean, if I ever went back home, I went to the church that I grew up in. But yeah, it was not a regular part of my life.
What prompted you to go to that church then?
Dude, I wish I could remember. I don't remember. Lexi, my wife, grew up going to church too.
Is she from Seattle?
She's from Chicago.
Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. And the church she grew up in was a little bit, was similar to Presbyterian. So, I mean, I have no memory. I have a hunch that we were dating, mm-hmm. and one of us suggested going to church, and by word of mouth, we found out about this Presbyterian church. I mean, it was so close to where we lived. We walked to it. So it made sense to visit that one. So I think that's why we did.
And from the first time you went in there, you felt like the whole a change coming, or
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I just felt kind of like we were home.
Yeah,
you know, I felt like there was things. This is a long time ago, dude. So it's you know, I feel like there were things that I was ready to learn somehow on some level. And that was the place where I was going to learn them, you know, and experience them. And the people that I would be surrounded with to have those experiences and learn those things.
So when you graduated, like, did you go to, like, a seminary or?
I did.
You did?
Yeah. Well,
you kind of have to, right?
Well, you don't have to. Like, you know, again.
Oh, like the non-denominational.
Yeah, yeah, some don't require anything. I graduated from college, got a job in sales, and we got married. I had a few jobs after college, but it was 6 or 7 years after I graduated college that I went to graduate school. And that's when we moved to Pasadena. I went to Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena.
How long did that last, kind of?
4 years.
Oh, it's a whole new degree.
Yeah. It's a Master's of Divinity. It's not a joke master's degree. It's a big one. You know, I hear about some people getting their master's in a year or two. It's okay. Not humanly, this degree, unless they change how it's done. I mean, from an accredited seminary, it takes too long. It's a long one.
So how long did you stay at Pasadena?
Just that time.
So, just for that?
Yeah. 2006 to 2010. And that's when in 2010, I was looking for a job in a church. I started the process to be ordained in the Presbyterian church at the same time I started seminary. Because they both took 3 or 4 years to get through. So by the time I graduated seminary, I was ready to be ordained in the Presbyterian church. Mm-hmm. And so we started looking for jobs. I tried to find something on the West Coast, tried to find something Chicago area where my wife's family was, and there was just nothing that was a perfect fit. I was looking for, and it's the job I'm in now, like a long-term job working with youth and families. Usually in churches, the youth pastor or the youth director or whatever is kind of a short-term job. You know, they hire somebody and that person works for a couple of years and then moves on. Or in an associate pastor job, you get that job for just a couple of years and then you spring into being a senior pastor, being the head honcho.
Okay, so it's like a training kind of thing?
Yeah, but that's not universally true. There are churches that see the role that I'm in, or, you know, people working with youth and families as a potential long-term job.
It seems to be like a base for like people's future and stuff like
yeah,
that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like a counselor.
Yeah. But if you're going to make an associate pastor job long-term, you got to pay it. You got to be willing to pay more long-term money, mm-hmm. you know, like, and set it up to where it's possible, you know, and be flexible with how the work. That's a whole nother longer response. But anyway, we expanded the search and Murfreesboro popped up, this church here in Murfreesboro, and we had never even heard of Murfreesboro.
And I was about to ask you, like, you're like, where is this?
Yeah, where is that? Oh, cool. It's near Nashville, so that's good.
Did you hear of Nashville before? Have you heard
of
it?
Oh, yeah. No, we'd never been to Tennessee, either of us. But
you always stayed at the West Coast the whole time?
Yep.
Before that?
Yep. I mean, I'd lived some summers in other places in the States.
Yeah.
You know, during college and stuff. But yeah, West Coast my whole life.
How was that? Was it hard for you to take the job here? The
culture shock?
Or just like being in California, it's like, okay, I'm going to go to Tennessee, which is
yes.
a whole different.
Yeah, I you know, and I don't think that my experience of moving to Murfreesboro and Lex and my wife. So when we moved here, we had two kids. We had our two girls. Our experience was not typical for someone who moves here from the West Coast, like, or from anywhere, because I was coming in as a pastor, one of the pastors at a church. So we were received like into this community of people who were being so careful and sensitive to us and so welcoming and loving. And they know that we're this young family who's moving from the West Coast and they, you know, they're just so gentle with us and they know it's going to be a culture shock. So we were really taken care of, you know, whereas most people who move here don't have anything like that. Like
you didn't have a big culture shock.
Oh, there was a culture shock, but we were taken care of. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I'd say there was a culture shock.
What was like the biggest?
You know, I mean, just the southern way of life.
You get used to random people talking to you.
A lot more friendly.
Yeah.
You know, on the surface, a lot of chit chat.
I had to get used to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because being in California, you don't talk to random people.
No.
Like, please don't talk to me. Kind of.
No.
Thing. Don't. Or don't talk. Even look at me. Kind of no. thing. Right.
Yeah. Don't wave at me. Don't talk to me. So that took some getting used to.
Well, you've always been a people person.
Yeah, not, so. I was gonna say not hard for me. I mean, yeah. I don't mind that.
For your wife though, being from Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, she'd been in Seattle. Kind of like, we were in Seattle for 10 years. And I don't know. You know, I think it was a shock to both of us.
Yeah.
You know,
the weather,
dude.
The summers.
Yeah, I mean, Bakersfield was hot.
Yeah, I bet.
But that's, you know, as the joke goes, is a dry heat there. I mean, there's not a drip of humidity there. It is so dry but hot, and Seattle's written so mild.
Yeah, I've never been to Seattle. Like, oh, how's
it's incredible.
How's the weather there?
Beautiful. Really? It's wet, you know.
Does it rain a lot? It rains a lot here sometimes.
It rains a lot. I think that actually the volume of rain we get here is way more than Seattle, because when it rains here, it pours.
Yes.
In Seattle, you could have 100 days of consecutive rain, but it's just cloudy and kind of misty. You know, like it's not
actual.
No, in the movies they show Seattle, like the rain just coming down. I'm like, it never rains like that there. I mean, honestly, I can't even. Thunderstorm in Seattle, rare to me. Like, I'm, you know,
Seattle here is the norm.
Yeah, very much the norm.
When I lived in California, it rained probably twice in
like
2 years almost.
Yeah, it doesn't rain a whole lot there.
No.
I mean, when it rains hard there, it becomes a problem.
So over there it's like super dry, and when it pours, their mudslides go everywhere. Yeah. So, like, they don't have any, like, balance.
No.
It's always hell on hell on hell kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the weather here was something else, man. And it still is. Like, even people who grew up here talk about the weather the same way that you and I are talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just hot.
Yeah.
Humid.
Did you want to, whenever you saw that job here, were you, like, immediately, like, okay, let's do it? Or were you trying to, like, stay on the West Coast kind of thing? Or were you up for any challenge?
We were up for it. You know, we were like, okay, let's do it. Let's have the conversation. You know, it took some time before we were like, committed. Okay, let's do it. Let's actually move there.
Did you do like a bunch of research about the town?
We did some, yeah. We had, you know, a few interviews over the phone. And then maybe after three or four of those, they flew me out here by myself. And had spent the night, maybe one or two nights here, and did some interviews and toured around, whatever. And then I flew home. They said they wanted to offer me the job. Yeah. But first they wanted to fly Lexi out here too. So they flew us out again, just me and Lexi. And we spent a couple nights here, and same kind of thing, just kind of toured around and met people. And they had little gatherings for us and all that. So by the time we decided to do it, we felt pretty good about it. Yeah. You know,
it's interesting to me, yeah, to have like interviews for that type of job, right?
Yeah.
Cause do they look at your qualifications? They're like, did you graduate, or are they like just trying to meet you, like trying to have a friend come and join your community kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's, I can't remember any of the questions they asked. I think it's more like what you're saying. It's more like, is this person, yeah, is this person going to be a good fit, you know, yeah. for, and I'm really, I don't think a church knows exactly what they even need when, you know, they create a job description for something.
Yeah.
It's good, but that's going to change quickly. I mean, working in a, especially in an associate pastor, kind of like what I do, it's very dynamic. It changes. So they do the best they can creating a job description, but at the end of the day, they don't know what they're doing. Yeah. They don't know what they need.
Yeah. You don't have a set job.
And even, I don't even know, like, okay, I see the job description. Is that going to be exactly what this church needs? I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to be at this for a few years and then it'll evolve and we'll figure out exactly, you know, what needs to be done and who needs mm-hmm. to be doing it and how it's going to look. So, and that's part of what has made this church so great. I mean, I'm in my 16th year at this church, same position. And people are always like, wow, 16 years. That's amazing. You know, cause I think the average length of time for an associate pastor to be in a specific job is like 2 years. You know,
are you the longest tenured employee there? Or
No. Okay. Our senior pastor got there 2 years ahead of me, so he's
okay
in his 18th year, I guess. But I always tell people, I think it says just as much about that community of people as it does about me and for being there. It's not just me who's sticking it out for mm-hmm. 15 years. They've been very flexible, very open-minded, giving me lots of room to try new things. And because a church can make it hell on a pastor, you know, on a staff person. Churches can burn pastors out, can ruin them. They can kill them. Yeah. And so when you see a church that has pastors who've been working at it for 15 or 20 years, it could be proof that it's a healthy church that's good with their pastors.
Yeah, that's
not always the case, but it could be.
Yeah, because maybe the Catholic is different, but yeah, we had a priest forever and then another one. But I think because they were most like old. I don't know if they died or something, probably.
Yeah, the way the Catholics do it's a little bit different, isn't it?
I think so, because they get appointed by...
Yeah, you get appointed.
By whoever, like the committee of whatever. I don't know how that is. But,
yeah.
But I mean, they had the Vatican, which is like the government, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting, kind of weird. Yeah, I don't know. I always had like this thought about like how it became so big once the Roman Empire made it the rule of law, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that kind of like, you know, it makes you, and that doesn't mean that it's bad, right? Because it's changed a lot from what it used to be.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it doesn't sit very well with me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I just think it might have nothing to do with it, you know? You know what I mean? Like,
you mean like enforcing religion?
Yeah. Kind of how it became just so, like you said, like very, like some of them are very strict kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, having a 7-year-old listen to the gospel, sometimes it doesn't feel like that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what happened to me. I just got kind of burned out because my parents made me go kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why, like, maybe it's like, I think it's like always a thing of like Catholics always come back when they're older because, like, kind of like they need it or something like that.
Yeah.
That's how it felt to me.
Mm.
Maybe I'll come back to something. It doesn't have to be the same thing, right?
Like, no.
I always felt like that about religion. It's like, or I had that perspective of like, I don't have to go somewhere to like, kind of have that relationship kind of thing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about like something like that? You think you have to go to somewhere to a church
to know that God loves you,
or just to have like
a relationship with God?
Yeah.
No. I mean, no, I don't think you have to go to be a part of a church to have a relationship with God.
What do you think is the main kind of like purpose of going to like a service?
You're asking some big questions, Edgar.
This is what I'm trying to.
I don't think you have to go to a church to have a relationship with God.
Or be a good kind of Christian person?
No. But I do think there's a lot of reasons why there's so much time and energy given in the Bible to why the relationships among people who are all trying to follow Jesus, mm-hmm. why those relationships are important, and why it's important to surround yourself with people who are also trying to love God and to love their neighbors and to live the way that Jesus lived, you know? And so there's value in it. So I don't think it's necessary, but I think there's a lot of, and I hate to use the word, but like a lot of blessing in it, you know, that you miss out on if you're not in that community of people who are all kind of in it together, you know?
You feel like it's more about the relationship with the people, kind of to have 100% like-minded individuals.
Yeah. You get together to remind yourselves of what life is all about, you know, and why we are out there doing what we're doing and how we're doing what we're doing. Like, so you're the stories that we orbit around are with the reason the church exists. And then to do important things like communion or to see someone baptized, these are important experiences for the church to share that kind of energize us to keep loving and serving other people, you know? So to me, the church, are you familiar with the idea of centered set versus bounded sets?
No.
It's a mathematical thing. I'm not a math guy, but I think it had something to do with originally with Australian cattle farming or something. Like there was two schools of thought on farming cows. You either a bounded set or a centered set. Bounded sets build fences. So you build fences around the cattle to keep them in, or you dig wells and the cattle will just stay near the wells. Two different schools of thought. In terms of church stuff, there are some churches that function more like bounded sets where they build fences mm-hmm. and they make very clear
this is
who's in and who's out. And if you want to be in, here's the checklist. And if you don't meet these criteria, you're not in. You don't belong here, you know? And there could be lots of things and different churches have different, you know, whatever. But some churches function more like bounded sets and they keep their people in because their boundaries are very well defined. And it's hard. It can be kind of hard to get in, hard to get out, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Versus other churches. And I hope the way that ours functions, and I think it does, is more like a centered set. There's no fence. Anybody can come in, you know, like, so there's no boundaries or rules, about coming in and being a part of this group, but there are wells that we have that we center ourselves around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, like the gospel, for example, that'd be a really big well, but like just some fundamental truths that we gather around.
Yeah.
And the purpose of like worshiping with people and being in community with people is to just get near that centered, that well for a minute. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which I think is important.
You think it's like important for like an end goal kind of thing?
No, just for life, to enjoy yeah. life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because that's how I felt like, obviously, you want to get into heaven, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like they emphasized that too much whenever I was going to church.
Yep.
And it's like,
yep.
Like, you have to do all this to get into heaven kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It just, you know, I'm not saying it's not right. Obviously, like, I would like to think that I could go to heaven if that was, that's, the, you know, like, what's coming next, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just felt a little kind of, I think that's what most people, I don't know. It depends what your perspective is. I'm still discovering
yeah.
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the church I grew up in emphasized that a lot, too. Like, heaven is this end goal. And you want to do what you can. You want to make sure you got everything figured out so that when you die, you go to heaven. And that's what the gospel does. It saves us from hell. so that we can live in eternity in heaven. Even as a kid, I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, as a young person, I wondered if that's even true. Like, is there a hell and a heaven? You know, I don't.
Yes.
Okay. And so are you telling me that all of my life I'm supposed to follow these rules and do all this stuff so that when I die, I go to heaven? You know, it just didn't, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say it didn't make sense to me, but I feel like there was missing something. And I never really liked what you're saying, like this emphasis on all of it so that we're saved so that we go to heaven. That seemed like a short
answer.
Kind yeah. Of. And so that you were talking about difference between like denominations and theological differences. That's a great example. At the Presbyterian Church that I'm at now and at the one we were in Seattle, that's not how they talk about heaven and hell. I mean, they don't really talk about hell at all in a Presbyterian church.
Okay.
At least none that I've ever been to. And heaven, Presbyterians believe that heaven is real. But also, when you ask a Presbyterian, like, when were you saved? You know, if you ask a Baptist when they were saved, the Baptist person is going to say, well, when I was 15 and I invited Jesus into my heart and was baptized, that's when I was saved, you know? So if I would have died before that, I guess I would have burnt in hell, you know? And because of that, I was...
Even if you were a good person,
man? Yeah, yeah. If you ask a Presbyterian when they were saved, the answer that you'll get more often is when, you know, 2,000 years ago when Jesus died on the cross and rose again, that's when all of humanity was saved. So I guess that's when I was saved. There's not like a moment that I was saved. And heaven...
It's not like a step that I have to go through.
No. And so like heaven, yeah, heaven's real, but also in our tradition, when Jesus rose from the grave and like the relationship between God and humanity and the relationship between us as humans and the relationship that we have with the earth, Jesus repaired all of that. Like it's back to what God intended. Now we're not there yet. Like there's still some bad shit that's going on. So it's a sort of, yes, it's we've been reconciled and like that relationship is made right again, but also it's not yet finished. Like there's still some, God's not done yet. But heaven is now. Like, it's not, so I would want to emphasize that we're saved to experience the good things that God has for us now. You can experience hell now too, you know? But heaven begins now. Like, and I know this is getting real churchy, but if you believe that Jesus really did like bring the kingdom of God to earth for us, and so we have like access to that kingdom. That starts now, you know, like not when we're dead.
Yeah,
you know, it starts now.
I think it kind of loses perspective. It's like you only have so much time.
Yeah.
To really enjoy every blessing that He has put here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're saved. So then it becomes more like, well, what are we saved for? You know, like we're not so much saved from. Like, we're saved from hell. Okay, whatever. I mean, that doesn't motivate me, you know?
Yeah.
But saved for what? You know? And that's when, like, oh, so this matters. Like, how I go about my day and how I treat other people. And
try to give people perspectives and stuff.
Yeah, and just to be generous and kind and loving and reflect, like, all these things that I believe to be true. About who God is, like I hope that is reflected in.
So what makes you like want to do this job? Like, what's your main, I guess, kind of your purpose or what you define as your purpose? Like, what
the pastor job?
Mm-hmm. What is your main goal? Like,
geez, dude, that's a good question. Man, my main purpose. I mean, I think ever since I started doing this job, I've got a little paper by my door when I leave my office that just says, follow Jesus. That's all I'm trying to do, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
follow where he's trying to take you?
Yeah.
Is that what it means to you, or?
It just means like, yeah, like I believe that like the Spirit of Christ is active, even in your, like right here and right now. And in your life, I don't care what anybody believes or what religion they belong to or like what their interests are. I believe that like God is active all around us all the time. And I'm interested in noticing what God is doing and trying to participate in it, you know, yeah. Whatever it is. That doesn't mean like proselytizing people or, you know, evangelizing people or like trying to get them to believe what I believe or anything like that. It just means like,
go with the flow.
Yeah. Paying attention to what I feel like God is doing in a place, you know, and participate in it. And like, and in places where I feel like love is absent or it's needed, then to be that expression when I can be.
Interesting. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
So that's the pastor job is just, one, I mean, I guess that's where I get paid to do that.
Yeah. Do you feel like a leader? Like, do you take that role
seriously? Do I take it seriously?
No. Do you feel like, yeah. Yeah. Kind of thing. Like you have a duty, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's your job, obviously, because yeah. you love doing this.
Yeah.
It's not just a job. It's your passion. So,
yeah.
It's a little different than just having a job.
Totally.
Because your job.
It's vocation. Like, it's vocational.
Yeah. Like, your job is literally to lead people in yes. some way.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a lot of pressure kind of thing?
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. The pressure, though, is usually, like, not the best stuff. It's in churches. Number like who's here and who's not, like how many people are coming to this thing, how many are not coming, like it's easy to start to
dwell into that
kind yeah of thing. And that's not a very good metric for success always, you know, who's here and who's not. Yeah. And so that's where pressure can come, is when you feel like things aren't being well attended or yeah. you know
yeah because you're not trying to get the most people, you just you want to deliver the message, I feel.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of. Yeah, and you mentioned relationships, like that's what's most important. So, I mean, how do you measure success when it's so abstract, you know?
In that field kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're pouring energy and love and time into students and building relationships with them, you know, like, so if we have a youth event of some kind, you know, and you want to know how it went for me, like, do I feel like it was a success? The question isn't how many kids came. You know, like,
yeah.
30. Like, oh, five so it was a success? No, it was terrible. You know, yeah. five people, you know, so the numbers don't matter. But it's easy to get hooked into thinking that way, you know. Yeah. I've even told Chad that with jiu-jitsu sometimes, like, because he can get down a little bit if there's, he's never said this exactly, but, you know, the numbers are low at a class, like, where's everybody? You know, da-da-da. Yeah. I've tried to encourage him a little bit, too, like, hey, man. Everybody loves this place.
Yeah.
You know, you get what, I don't remember how I said it, but be happy with who's here. And
because whoever's here really wants to be.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we get lost in a lot, like you said, like we get lost in the numbers of like me, for example, like out, like following the music stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was constantly like angry and sad that mm-hmm. it wasn't happening, but look what I got. You know,
yeah.
like I have a great partner. We have a house. We're not hungry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think it's that perspective that is missing, especially nowadays with all the social media kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to be like a millionaire to be a super successful guy.
No.
Like to me, like I've changed my, and that I got that from jiu-jitsu too. Like. Whenever they say like the clarity of mind kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
it's true. Like I'm so much happier now.
Yeah.
Even without doing what I love to do, I'm not doing it like professionally, right, or anything like that. But
yeah.
I'm happy. Like I'm doing this with you.
Yeah.
I've met you, or I met so many people from Guardian.
Yeah.
Like to me, that's what success kind of means to me now. Obviously. Yeah.
You're evolving, dude.
Yeah.
You're evolving.
Yeah, I guess you can say that. And
what else is it if it's not that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know? That's how I feel. Like I said, like, I would have never done this before with a stranger kind of thing.
Sure.
Like, now I'm like, this is what really kind of makes me grow. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. This is what makes us grow. I mean, you don't have to have a podcast to have conversations like this and experiences this. Yeah. I mean, you know that. Yeah. And people know that.
But I think if people really heard it, and maybe you're not interested in this podcast, but if you get a message, I was like, hey, there's real connection to be had to grow personally. Everything else is going to be a lot easier.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always, my sort of perspective is if you mentioned like anger and sadness and stuff, and I don't remember who said this, but if at a foundational level, I think it was Richard Rohr, if at a foundational level you're not enjoying life, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Life's meant to be enjoyed. And the beauty is, like, we are in control of that. I mean, to an extent. But joy doesn't care about circumstances. Can be in the worst possible circumstances and still live with this inexplicable joy. Does it mean they're happy? No. You know, not necessarily. Happy is very circumstantial, you know, and depends on what's happening. And
very personal, too, because I should have been happy the whole time.
Yeah. But joy is different, you know. Yeah. So that sounds good, man.
So why did you start jiu-jitsu? Like,
a friend of mine that I knew here had been going and invited me. I had not ever done any martial arts ever.
Did you play sports in high school?
I played soccer and swam my whole life.
Oh, me too.
Both?
So, yeah, yeah. I started swimming was my first sport.
What'd you swim?
Well, in Guatemala. Like, I liked the butterfly the most and the freestyle. Then I started playing baseball and then soccer.
Okay.
And then just started playing drums, and it was like, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't done martial arts. Tried it out and loved it right away.
For me, the thing, when I started jiu-jitsu, I hadn't really worked out or done sports for the longest. Is that how you were too, or were you always like working out and stuff?
I tried to maintain some sort of physical something. Mm. When I first moved to Murfreesboro, I started playing adult league soccer.
Oh, nice.
And was doing that some. Running, you know, on and off, lifting weights, trying to do something physically, but nothing like that.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
So how was your first class?
First class?
Do you remember, like?
No.
You forget a lot of stuff.
I mean, I do. Well, dude, I'm 47. Do you remember your... Well, how long have you been doing jiu-jitsu?
Around 2 years.
Okay,
well, so this is recent.
I bet 2 years into it, I remember my first class. See, let's see. Well, and now you've probably talked about it so much, you'll never forget it.
I wonder if like 10 years from now, I'll remember, because I remember very vividly I got my ass whooped. So,
really?
By a really big athletic guy. So
It does happen in there.
Yeah. I started at Legion, which is where we're now, that building. Yeah. And he was this cop, and he put neon belly on me the first time. And
brutal.
I tapped. I was like, I've never
felt... What an asshole.
I've never felt anything like it.
Yeah.
It was so...
It's a unique sensation.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I've never puked or anything like that, because like...
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you just tried it and you just...
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember some of the early days, like, but getting worked and working too hard. You know, I remember rolling with... higher belts and being encouraged to just breathe, you know, like while I'm rolling, like calm down, man, just breathe.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and eventually you figure that out.
So what do you think just kept you coming? Like, what is it about?
Man, there's so much I love about jiu-jitsu, and there's so many, like everything that I think is good about it. I wouldn't have told you right away that this is why I'm doing it. You know what I mean? I mean, you get a lot of, the community is great there. There's friendships to be made. There's, so that's all great. I mean, I probably wouldn't still be going to Guardian if the community stunk, you know.
It's not something you just go. It's not like going to the gym where it's like you don't have to like talk with anybody and stuff like that.
No, but it's I think what I initially loved about it, the things I loved about it initially, I still love about it. Like the physical, just the physical exercise of it is great. I mean, it is a workout. For those of you who don't know, it is a workout. Yeah. And then also getting you're fighting. So like you get your aggression out doing that too, you know, whether you're the one choking somebody or getting choked, I think there's something happening on a chemical level that's good to get your wiggles out and kind of let out some of that aggressive energy in a way. I think it's good to do something that you suck at, you know? And I know I've been doing it for a while, but I still feel like I'm pretty terrible at it.
Oh, yeah. That never goes away, huh?
And so I like not being the best one at a thing in a room, but being somebody who's just like everybody else. You know, like, I'm not the expert in there. I'm terrible at this. Mm-hmm. So it's humbling and it's challenging. There's so much to learn.
I think that's what keeps most people coming, right? It's like the having to learn something every single session, right?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most stimulating things that anybody could do.
Yeah. Well, and it's really true. Like everything I heard about jiu-jitsu when I was in the first few years, like after becoming a blue belt and being told, like, eventually, you know, whether it was Chad or Matt talking about this or seeing it on YouTube or something and hearing, like, eventually you'll start stringing moves together and you'll be able to start thinking a move or two ahead and eventually you'll develop your own style and all this. And that was like nowhere for me. Like that didn't define my game then. Like I guess I believe you, but it's fun to have hung around and done it for long enough to see that's actually true. Like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause I'm just a blue belt. So
you do.
I'm just like really starting to understand a little bit.
Well, eventually Edgar, it starts to gel. I mean, it does start to make sense and it starts to feel more like a flow of movement than a herky jerky fight for survival, you know?
It becomes chess instead of checkers.
That's what they say. Yeah. I'm terrible at chess, so I never liked that analogy. But that's what they say. Checkers is more fun than chess, so.
Oh, I love checkers. Yeah.
Yeah. Chess is so hard, man.
I know. And I have to have a list of how I can move each piece.
Right.
It's like, I just like going side to side.
Yeah.
Jump over. That's it.
Yeah. My 12-year-old nephew would smoke me in chess. Like, so I don't know. Yeah. But I have heard that before about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. Even do you feel like, I feel to this day, I don't know why I still do it. Do you feel like
you
that?
You don't know why you do?
It's like, did you hear about jiu-jitsu before you started?
I mean, a little bit. I liked watching MMA, so I knew about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd heard about it.
So you just started because one of your friends told you to come over?
Okay. Yeah. Sounded badass to me. I mean, jiu-jitsu sounds tough. I knew it was the real deal.
Just the word jiu-jitsu sounds more badass than karate, right?
Yeah, like if my friend invited me to go to karate, I probably would have said no. No offense to karate practitioners.
Yeah.
So why do you keep doing it?
Man, I don't know. Cause I'm always hurting. So why keep doing something that hurts? Right.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where obviously I like it. Obviously I keep going because I like it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it. But I think the purpose is just what comes after it. I think that's I feel like kind of like how you found religion where like that's what keeps you together to do other stuff. I feel like I need that and in sense of like the physical kind of output because I always play sports and I always loved playing sports.
Yeah.
I feel like because I stopped doing so much once I started doing something again and consistently, I think after, and it, like we said, like it's so hard. Like you're literally kind of fighting for your life, because if that happened somewhere else, you know, it's different, right?
Yeah.
But just having that struggle, everything else is like pretty mild.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about that feeling though of like when you're rolling with somebody and you get it in your mind that you want to do something and you do it? Yeah. Like when something, are you familiar with that feeling? Like when something comes together, like you get this sweep from a certain position, and that feeling of like doing it, I did it.
Yeah.
Whew, that worked, you know? Like I find that to be a very satisfying.
Yeah.
That keeps me coming back.
Yeah.
You know, and do you agree with that or not?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you're like, wow, I can't believe I actually did what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a good golf shot. I mean, that's like sweet, man.
Yeah. I'm a sucker at golf.
I do too, but I love it.
Oh, you play golf a lot too?
Yeah.
Did you play a lot before?
I started playing golf in junior high.
Did you play did you have a team in high school?
I didn't play golf in high school.
No.
I've always been a recreational golfer.
Oh, yeah. I've only played golf probably twice.
Mm.
It's not. So back to jiu-jitsu, like, what was...
Forget golf.
Yeah, forget golf. What's your favorite belt so far?
Favorite belt?
Yeah.
Huh. Hmm. I felt like I was a blue belt forever.
How long have you been a brown belt?
What is now? So we're in September.
September 25.
About a year.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
About a year. I don't think blue belt was my favorite.
Did you compete a lot? Or once. Have you only competed once your whole time?
As a purple belt.
Oh, yeah. That's serious competition right there.
Yeah. It was fun, man. I loved it, actually. I would do it again. It's just a time problem for me.
Yeah.
And there's not always a lot of guys my age and whatever. And, you know, like I've signed up for other tournaments and just dropped out because there was nobody and they wanted to move me into this different.
The younger people.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you only competed once?
Once.
How did that go?
You want to hear about it?
Yeah.
Dude, it was so much fun.
You said purple belt?
Yeah. It was an IBJJF tournament in Nashville. I was ready to rock, dude. I was ready. I felt good.
Everybody says that.
I still have the note in my phone where I planned out like
your game plan.
Yeah, like not the game plan for the fight, but like what time I'd wake up, time I would eat this, drink that, eat this, drink that. Like 20 minutes before, 5 minutes before. Like I was so mentally like dialed in. And I will say, like the experience of it was very positive for me. I did not win. I'll explain that in a second. But it was like this the most significant adrenaline rush I've had in my adult life, probably. Like I can't remember a time where I've felt that much adrenaline surging through me. But I also felt very focused. Like I did not feel out of control and nervous. I just felt like laser focused and relaxed, but also just adrenaline
amped up.
Yeah, man. To the max. I fought this dude from Arizona who was ripped. And apparently we were the same age, or same weight and close to age, obviously. But I can show you a picture later, dude. He was ripped and very proud of his muscles.
Did you see that and you were like, oh, God.
Yeah, I was. I was like, shit, this dude's going to be strong as heck.
Yeah.
Even
though you're the same weight class,
yeah,
some people are just like,
and I'm a strong dude, but I don't look that like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the match started, and I felt my plan was to foot prop him. Like we did so many foot props over the years at Guardian, I feel like I can foot prop almost anybody given time. Like it's a matter of time, and so got some grips. We're playing a stand up game.
You doing the gi?
Yeah, gi. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to foot prop him. He's not really trying to break my grips either. He's just kind of going berserko. And he dove down for a single leg once, and I just kind of backed off of it, and he popped up. Maybe twice I he was so strong and so fast that I should have abandoned the foot prop early on. I should have gave up on that, but I didn't, because I twice I almost got him down, but he scrambled so crazy, like it was, you know. And then so here we go. He goes in for a single leg again. He misses it. I sprawl. I didn't circle around and take his back. I can't remember exactly where we went, like, from there. But that's one thing I learned. You know, if someone goes for a single leg or double and they miss it and they end up kind of turtled down, and you sprawled on them,
circle.
I should have gone like a lightning bolt, zip, right around and got my hooks in on the back. I didn't do that.
Did you keep like a headlock kind of thing?
And well, somehow he managed to scramble up and got 2 points for a takedown.
Really?
Yes. So that was the only points of the whole match right there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We scrambled around a little bit on the ground.
They counted that as a takedown, even though you sprawled?
Yes.
That's crazy.
You know what it might have been, now that I'm remembering? He went for one. I sprawled. I didn't go to the back. Somehow we scrambled back onto our feet, and I was going for the props again. Then he went for a takedown again, and I didn't. I tried sprawling, but didn't get it enough, and he got enough of a takedown. So he got the points. This is probably the most boring story anybody's ever heard on your podcast. Anyway, we ended up on the ground. Eventually, he trapped one of my arms under my... I had him in closed guard,
yes.
Right? And this is another thing I just didn't know. He's in my closed guard, which I didn't mind because I had a little plan from there. And he's not going for any submissions at all. But he traps one arm under my
back.
My back. He's holding me.
Yes.
And he's just crunched down on me, holding.
He's just holding
letting time go.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm pissed, dude.
I bet.
I can't, and I didn't know how to get out of there.
It's tough. Yeah, that grip is tough.
He's got me here. My left arm was free, and I was holding his collar, but I didn't know how to get out of there. And since I've learned, like, now I know how to. I could have gotten out of there had I known. I didn't.
Your arm's going numb.
Yeah, my right arm, shoulder's killing me.
Oh, yes.
He's not moving, though. He's not going for anything. He's just riding out the clock. And I mean, with like 30 seconds left, I finally like somehow got out of there, but time ran out. And there you go.
And that's your only match?
Only match.
I've had, I think, 5 matches.
Okay.
2 tournaments. And the first one, so when I first started jiu-jitsu was January 23. And in February, I got hurt. I sprained my knee.
Okay.
So I was out for 3 months or something like that. And then I came back to train in July, and around, I think it was November. So it's like 5 months in technically of me actually training.
Yeah.
And he took me down with a double leg. I had no idea what a double leg was. He just took me down. And I think that was, he was in my close guard for like 3.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he passed my guard after that time, and that was it. No, but like what I was interested in is like whenever I first started at Legion, pretty much anywhere, I'm always like the smallest guy.
Yeah,
like I'm not that big, so I had been used to training with like that first guy that I ever trained with. He was like 250 kind of
thing. Yeah,
and there was a bunch of guys that were like 200 pounds and stuff like that. So I had been used to that kind of weight, and when I competed, he felt so weak, but I had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
So that was my demise. I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but this guy, but I can control this guy. But yeah, like he just spent the whole time in my full guard.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, I wish I'd gone in that guy's full guard because that would have been some point op. Like,
yeah,
I could have escaped that and gotten something.
Did you want to compete more?
I enjoyed it enough to want to, I'd like to do it sometime.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, that was 2021, two.
It's always been like the time kind of thing that you get. Yeah.
Yeah. It's time, tough. Man.
It's tough.
Because you want to be able to ramp up a little bit, train more.
Train, yeah.
Increase the intensity of training. From it, you know, I usually do, I'm only 2 times a week, maybe 3, but before a tournament, like you want to get up maybe 5.
Yeah.
Just really kind of get going.
Yeah. Yeah, competing's always been like, I always say I want to do it. I don't know why. It just doesn't happen that often.
No.
But the guys are going to ADCC. That sounds fun and tough. I definitely want to compete, especially a blue belt, man, because now I have to deal with heel hooks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that is kind of like detracting me a little bit, because I'm not much of a leg guy, and we don't, I feel like we train everything,
mm-hmm.
but the leg locks is always kind of like just a little part of the whole broad sense of jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
And
yeah. Time. I mean, like I feel like the longer I've done it, the more, I mean, I still get tapped out all the time.
Oh yeah.
But there's a lot of things now I can protect myself from.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
Yeah. I feel like I've gotten pretty good at defending a lot, because I've been defending for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like a little bit, clicking a little bit more about what I can do or what I like to do, where I feel more comfortable. I think that's what blue belt is, like starting to understand a little bit.
Yeah.
Or.
Yeah. Sampling everything still, right?
Yeah.
Still learning.
Yeah. You think you didn't like being a blue belt that much? Or
I just felt like it was eternal. And not that I've never cared about the belts really. Like, I'm not fixated on when you get a stripe or. Mm-hmm. That just was the long, I mean, blue belt, and it usually is the longest belt.
Yeah.
It takes the longest to get through. So you just,
because after that is just time. It's like
it feels
just
like a trudge. Yeah. The blue belt can.
Yeah.
A lot of people quit during blue belt.
Yeah, I don't understand what the whole blue belt curse is.
I don't either. I never have wanted to quit.
Yeah, I don't think I ever wanted. Maybe once. Maybe when I got hurt, I was like, "Why am I doing this?" And then I just went back, and it's just.
You're 30. How old did you say? 30.
33.
33. You've been doing it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine. Let's both of us imagine starting jiu-jitsu when we were 21.
I know. That's why I always say.
It's like, then the blue belt curse makes more sense to me. Like, if you gave 22 or 23-year-old me a blue belt, was I really going to stick it out for 5-4 years? Like, and I don't know, man. Like,
yeah.
The 20-something kid who gets a blue belt, I can see why that person might say, screw this, man.
Whatever.
You
know, yeah.
Whatever. I think for someone like you or me who's a little older, that those rules may not apply. Like
you think it's better to start jiu-jitsu like that when you're more mature and like.
I don't know. I mean, I always I've said to other, like, when I'm rolling with the kid who's in his early 20s, I'm like, man, I can't imagine having started this when I was your age. You know, to be so young and like energized and whatever,
strong and
everything. Yeah, it'd be crazy. You'd be unstoppable if you stuck it out, like Chad is, you know, just.
Yeah, was he like one of the youngest black belts ever?
Unbelievable.
That guy. Rolling with him is.
Dude, yeah.
He foot switched me from like 4 feet away.
Yeah.
He's also like 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
He's skinny, but he feels like 300 pounds.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
It's crazy.
I don't know. Starting as an adult, though, I do think it gives us an edge, you know. I think adults tend to be better learners.
Yes.
We focus a little bit better. We're less distracted.
Yeah.
We've done away with all that adolescent, like, stuff.
Angst, all that stuff.
So, yeah. Maybe, yeah, hopefully we function with a little more humility, a little less ego.
Yeah.
And so we're just better students and better learners.
I discovered that, yeah, after probably, like, around 28 is when I started to, like, trying to understand all this, like, humanity kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, like, I always said, like, if I could go back to school, I guess this would be the time, which is, like, now I'm eager to learn, actually learn. Because back in the day, it was just, you know, school was whatever. You just want to do your thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm, like, a learning phase, which is... I wish that would have been a little bit earlier.
I know what you mean. I'm the same. Like, I wish there's a bunch of college classes I wish I could take over again, because I would even like to take math again. Like, give me another shot at, like, trigonometry. Because this brain could do so much better than my 16-year-old brain did. You know, I didn't start graduate school until I was 28, I think. A whole different experience than undergraduate school.
Why do you think it took you so long to decide?
Well,
to
that go? Was just like the journey, though, for me. You know, like having graduated from college and getting a job and feeling like I want to go to seminary and become a pastor or whatever.
What was there like an emptiness kind of thing that you felt that you wanted to go do the seminary kind of thing?
Emptiness?
Yeah, or did you always wanted to like, I want to do that, but it's not the time yet?
Oh, I wasn't sure. I don't think. No, I don't think. When I graduated from college, I think maybe I wondered if I might go to seminary someday, but I wasn't like feeling this longing to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So by the time I thought I think it's time to go to seminary. And my wife's like, yeah, I think it may be time. Then we just did it. There was no.
You like, think it was more of a timing? It's like, okay, now is the time, or yeah, because it wasn't like it wasn't like a coming to Jesus kind of thing. Like
no,
like oh my God, this is what I've been missing.
Yeah, or something like that. It felt like now's the time.
So you always had that in your mind, like you wanted to do this.
No, not always, but
comes and goes.
Do you mean leading up to going to graduate school and seminary?
Yeah, to change your life to do this. Because you were doing whatever
sales
jobs.
And all this other stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, once I started volunteering in the church and was working outside the church, I would think, I mean, I did sales for 2 years, outside business sales. I sold insurance for 2 years. I started a general contracting business.
Did you enjoy all that stuff?
It was fine. That whole time, though, I was volunteering at our high school youth group. So once a week, I'm going and like helping with youth group with this other team of volunteers or whatever. That I loved. Like, I would spend all week like thinking about that and excited to do that.
Nice.
You know, and I'm working. And all I'm like, can't
you're
wait
thinking
for
about
youth group.
The one day.
Yeah, I mean, I was the best volunteer you could possibly dream for. I was at everything. I'd help out in any way I possibly could. I'd go on the trips.
You're like, please give me more things to do.
Yeah, I would take my vacation time I got from work, I would use for youth trips. As seminary got closer, it was only because we felt like the timing was right. Like, this is what I want to do. I feel like this is what God wants me to do. Nice. Or God's at least inviting me to do it. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's cool. I like it. Man, this was an interesting... I know it was kind of all over the place.
Yeah, we covered a lot.
I go back and forth, but, you know. Head only works one way for me, so
yeah. It was great, man. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hope so. I do this to like, not for mostly for me, obviously, but hopefully other people like get inspired or something to just you know be more human. I think
yeah,
because I feel like we're getting even though we're all connected, we're like so far apart. Most people don't even know their neighbors and stuff like that. I think I want to get back to like. When I grew up, you know, like 2000s, like I wish we could still go, like go ring my friend's doorbell. I was like, hey, are you home or something like that? Like, is he home? Can he come out to play or something like that? You know, like I think we were all more in tune with each other. I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like now everybody's just trying to defend something instead of trying to come together. So.
Yep.
I hope. You enjoyed this because I did. It was fun.
I did enjoy it, and yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah. I love the reasons that you're doing it.
I want to get more people here. Maybe we can do something with someone that you know that would be interesting. That would be cool.
Okay, yeah.
And I got more microphones, so we can have 3 people, 4 people. So
can you imagine?
Huh?
Can you imagine?
That would be
crazy.
Yeah, it would be fun. But I appreciate it, Bobby. Are you on Instagram or anything?
I am, but I will. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll put it on the description when I post it or something.
Yeah, I'll share it. I'll do what I can.
Yeah.
Spread the word. Spread the love.
Yep. That's all about. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, brother. Yeah.